Coming to you live from Central Texas, it's Let's Talk with your host, Eric Jackson. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy the great conversation. And now, here's the host of Let's Talk, Eric Jackson! All right, good afternoon, and welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Eric Jackson, and today is Tuesday, y'all. That's right, I'm refreshed, got me some rest, and we're ready to get started with a wonderful show today. So I hope everybody's ready, because we're going to get it on. Now, yesterday we had a great show as well, so we're going to like continue on, but we're going to add a little more, fuel to the fire today. That's right. Now, check this out, y'all. Okay. Today's show is going to be Martin or Malcolm, or as I put it, Malcolm or Martin. You know, who would you follow? Yeah, that's right. You know, since we got on the thing about racism and equality and all that good stuff yesterday, I figured that would be a good topic for today. You know, so we can really get down to the nitty gritty and see where everybody's falling at in this great place we call the world. Of course. Now, if you want to join the conversation, no problem. Just give me a call, 347-838-8622. Email me at ericletstalk@gmail.com or join me in the chat room. All they do is log into your Facebook page, your MySpace, your Instagram, whatever you use. You know, and join me in the chat room. And we can have a great conversation there as well. You know, usually sometimes that's where the best conversation goes on, in the chat room. So, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's no problem either. Just type in Driven for Life 62, and four is F-O-R, and trust me, I'll be there. No, I'm not going anywhere. Now, before we go anywhere else and do anything else, now y'all know I have to do my little commercial, right? That's right, because they pay the bills. So let's go on and get this barbecue commercial on out the way, and the barbecue is beaming too, but anyway. Just going to get this commercial out the way, and then we'll come back and get started with today's show. See you in about a minute and 30 seconds. Hey, Colleen Fort Hood, are you looking for some down-home smoked barbecue? Meat so tender it falls off the bone? If so, I have the perfect place for you. Tastes Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar, located at 1015 Adams Avenue, just 2 minutes from the Fort Hood East Gate. They're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. The menu includes barbecue ribs, chicken, mouth-watering brisket, macaroni and cheese, potato salad, coleslaw, baked beans, collard greens, rice and beans. They also have red tea. They also have Kool-Aid. Yes, y'all, Kool-Aid. The red Kool-Aid. You hear me? Oh, yeah. And all the food is prepared daily. That's what I'm talking about. You have trouble getting off of work and going to sit down and eat, no problem. They take call-in orders. Just give them a call, 254-213-9660. Tastes Like More Barbecue and Snack Bar. Woo! Barbecue so good, makes you want to come back for more. Check them out. All right. That would taste more like barbecue and snack bar. And believe me, y'all, the barbecue is off the chain. You hear me? I go up there and I get me a plate all the time. Lately, I've been hitting up the barbecue chopped beef sandwiches. Oh, boy, it's like Lay's potato chips, you know? You just can't eat one half the time. Now, I know some of y'all probably be on a diet, so it kind of, y'all kind of get scared about what you're eating. But I'm telling you, man, the food is off the chain. And the red Kool-Aid, this Kool-Aid is not syrup. So if y'all ever in the area, stop by and check Chiz out. You know, he is a veteran, African-American, and he does give discounts to military and college students. So check him out, y'all. He's my boy. We were in Korea together, so yeah, he's on point. Now, with all that being said, let's get on down to the get down today. Today, we're going to talk about Malcolm or Martin. Which one? Which one would you rather follow? Yeah, but hey, check this out. Speaking of following and all that good stuff, there was a teenage student who was suspended for not wanting to wear an ID card that had a chip in it. You know, one of them chips with the GPS. Yeah, they suspended because she said it went against her religious beliefs. Now, here's my thing about this. I don't blame the child, whether it was her religious beliefs or not. I wouldn't wear nothing with no chip in it talking about keeping track of me. Now, I know some of y'all say, well, you know, it's our child, and you know, things happen to children now, and we need to know where they are. Well, I think there's a better way of doing it than putting a chip around the child's neck. You know, they put chips in animals, y'all. Animals. Not humans. We don't need to be having no damn chips on us. Hey, unless you're on house arrest. Now, if you're on house arrest, then fine. You're going to get that chip put on you. That's what I'm saying. But until then, heck no. No. That is not happening. I don't agree with that. And you know what? We can talk about that, too. I think that, you know, that's just another way. That's just another way they try and get over on you. I'm serious. It's high school students now. The next thing you know, they be talking about putting it on every person in the United States to keep track of where you are. Now, you know who they really do need to put a chip on? Be honest with you. Them damn pedophiles and child molesters get out of prison that they seem to be losing track of all the time. They're supposed to be living in these certain neighborhoods. But they have false addresses. Now, they need to put a chip on those nasty asses. That's what they need to do. Yeah. If you're just going to have to chip somebody, why not? Put a chip on them. I'm just saying. No, but don't be putting no chip on my child. Hell, I know where my child be at. I don't need you to find out. And number two, now let's be realistic. It's easy to get around the damn thing, y'all. You know, it's in the ID card, right? So you can just leave the ID card in a spot and go on about doing your business anyway. So what purpose is it really serving besides wasting money? No, I mean, I'm just putting it out there. Y'all may not agree with me, but that's fine. It's just my opinion, and that's how I feel about it. Nah. I'm just saying. Now that I have that off my chest, and it feels a little lighter now, let's talk about the same Malcolm or Martin. So we got Malcolm X or Martin Luther King Jr. Wow. Two of the, of our most distinguished community leaders of the past. Now, you know, they had a basic belief in the same thing, that they wanted equality for the African-American community. You know, they wanted freedom, but the outlook on it was a little bit different as to how to get there. You know what I mean? Now, Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. That's what he said, by any means necessary. Now, and Brother Martin, you know, he said nonviolent was the way to go. Now, both of these brothers took trips over, you know, into other countries and had a very, very enlightening view of what was really going on as far as the world compared to what was going on over here in America. And that kind of really influenced, it did really influence the way they really looked at things once they got back here to the United States. Excuse me. Now, we both know that, you know, Brother Malcolm was a member of a Nation of Islam, you know, under the tutelage of Elijah Muhammad. That's right. So, and at the time, you know, Brother Malcolm, he was doing as he was told by the Elijah Muhammad. Now, and you have to remember now, at this time, in our history, you know, racism was like rampant. It was, you know, we think it's bad now. It was even worse. I'm not going to say it was worse then, because at least you knew what you were dealing with then compared to now. Now, I may argue that it's worse now because it's hidden and underhanded. At least back then, you knew what you was dealing with. And these brothers realized what was going on. Now, but as I said, they had different beliefs. Now, Claude Anderson, in his book Powernomics, you know, he speaks on, the theories that both of these brothers used, you know, separately. They were using it separately, but he mentions it in his book now, and that's vertical and horizontal integration. Okay, I know I lost a lot of people now. Okay, basically what he's saying is, Brother Malcolm believed that, using the case of Rosa Parks, okay, she sat on the front of the bus, and that started a big civil rights thing, right? Right. Well, Brother Malcolm believed, okay, we were already sitting on the bus, even though it was in the back. Yes, it was a good thing to move to the front of the bus, but instead of just being happy with sitting in the front of the bus, how about we own the bus companies? You know what I'm saying? We get out there and use our resources and things to better ourselves and our communities. Now, that's basically, and when he said any means necessary, he meant any means necessary. Now, he wasn't, and this is something that a lot of people get confused. He was not an advocate for violence per se, but his belief was, if you use violence against me, then I have the right to protect myself and use violence back towards you. And that was it. No, but of course, you know, it was twisted, and to this day, a lot of people still believe that it was all of Malcolm X was all about violence. Well, that's not true. You know, he just believed that we as African Americans, instead of selling for what, you know, so what we, you know, can get, won't we take what we need, what we wanted. And that's by any means necessary. You know, and you know, some people may have a problem with that, but that's what he believed in. And, you know, I found a quote that he actually said, and it made a whole lot of sense to me. It says, sitting at the table doesn't make you a diner. You must be eating some of what's on that plate. Being here in America doesn't make you an American. Being born here in America doesn't make you an American. Okay, that's from the Ballot of the Bullet speech, April 3rd, 1964, that he made in Cleveland, Ohio. You know, and that makes sense. That makes sense. Just because you're born here, you know, and we see it every day, right? We see it every day. Every day. So Brother Malcolm, he had his beliefs, and they made a lot of sense to some. They made a lot of sense. You know, and he also said, my alma mater was books, a good library. I could spend the rest of my life reading, just satisfying my curiosity. You see what I'm saying? Oh, Lord have mercy. I mean, really? And that's something we talk about all the time, isn't it? We, as African Americans, we need to educate ourselves. You know, as we were talking yesterday on the show, Mr. Solution and a couple of other brothers stated, hey, we need to sit down and read. We need to read. And reading has gotten so easy now. Heck, you don't even have to read if you have a tablet and stuff. The only thing you got to do is find an e-book. And the tablet will read it for you. This is an app you can download, and it'll read the book for you. So that makes it real easy, right? I mean, so, you know, that's some of the things that Brother Malcolm believed in. Now, Brother Martin, on the other hand, you know, he went and visited Gandhi in India. And once he came back, he also realized, you know, okay, he's so impressed with how Gandhi led nonviolence protests in his country, and he came back with the belief that nonviolence was the way to go. You know, no matter what happened, as long as we stood fast and stayed and kept believing what we believed in, there would be no, you know, we would get to what we want. Now, should we give up? No. That's not what he was saying. Okay? That's not what he was saying. But what he was saying was, you know, violence doesn't always get what you want. Compared to what Brother Malcolm said, if you hit me in the face, I'm going to hit you back in your face. I'm going to put it plain and simple. And that was basically the two different theories that they have. Now, what Brother Martin was also talking about is also mentioned in Mr. Claude Anderson's book, you know, about horizontal integration. Now, when we talk about horizontal integration, what we're talking about now is in the case of Rosa Parks. We're going to go back to Rosa Parks. You know, Negroes weren't allowed to sit in the front of the bus. Everybody had to sit on the back. So with her moving to the front of the bus, okay, we have improved where we were. Now we no longer are just allowed to sit in the back. Now we can sit in the front. But instead of moving up the chain, we just actually moved to the side a little bit. You understand what I'm saying? We advanced, but we really didn't advance in the same realm or parameter. I may be losing some of y'all, but I'm just trying to break it down to you before we really get into this. Now, if you want to join the conversation, add what you want to add to it. Just give me a call, 347-838-8622. I'd be more than happy to listen to you. We're going to get a good conversation going here. You know, and thank the guests in the chat room. I see y'all out there. LT, 4805, 4742. I see y'all out there. Let's get these phone lines going, y'all. Now, but as I was saying, and there are other things that are, there's other things, you know, everybody listen to his speech at the Washington, I'm getting my notes here. And at Washington, you know, when he was at the monument and that fateful day where he gave the I Have a Dream speech. But you know what's so funny about that? Most people, if you ask them what the rest of the speech was, they have no freaking idea what the rest of the speech was. They don't, because they didn't know, and they really can't tell you everything he said about I Have a Dream, I Have a Dream part of it. He can't. They can't because they really don't know. Only thing they know is I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out of the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yeah, that was the dream. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But does anybody mention that during that dream, he also mentioned that we cannot turn back? You know, there are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, will we be satisfied? We can never be satisfied. Now, that was in the speech of Martin Luther King that day, his I Have a Dream speech. He said it himself. We can never, never be satisfied. And I think that's part of the problem we have today as a community. In a lot of cases, we are too damn satisfied with what we've been given as crumbs, which is considered crumbs. That's right. I'm just saying. I know I get somebody. Good afternoon. You're on Let's Talk. What's on your mind? Hello?
Hi, Eric. What's the question?
The question is, Malcolm or Martin, who would you follow?
The big question, by the way.
The big question is, when are we going to stop being satisfied with this nonsense that we go through on a daily basis?
Okay, and the nonsense being, there's a lot of it, but...
Well, see, that's part of the discussion we're going to get in. The nonsense is our inability to progress, our inability to realize that we need to stop selling for crumbs and go for what we know.
Yeah, but what do you want? Where do you want to go?
Well, see, that's what we need to figure out. I want to go to the mountaintop like Martin Luther King said. But my question is, which way do we go? Do we take Brother Malcolm's stance and go any means by any means necessary? Or do we take Brother Martin's stance of, you know, peacefully and slowly make it up the mountain? Which way do we go?
Well, that's two sides of the same coin. They were both dealing with the same situation.
Right.
And I think both of their positions were right. Now, what happened is their positions culminated in what? the 1964 Civil Rights Act, correct?
Correct.
All right. Every other group uses that. White males use that. White homosexual males use that. Feminists, lesbian, white females use it. Immigrants use it. Everybody uses that particular format that was fought for and won by those titans, by historical titans. Dr. Anderson, I just thought, he was contemporary with both those figures and others.
Correct. Correct.
Now, what Dr. Anderson talks about basically is just that, you know, he talked about white racism, if you read his book, but that was in the past. White racism is not nearly at the fever pitch that it was at that particular time. What happened now is he talks about, well, what he says is two things, you know, American blacks have two issues confronting them. It was white racism in the past. And obviously that has some lingering effect, but most people don't know what it is. But he also points out another very, very crucial point, and that is black inappropriate behavior. That's the area that is most impactuous and detrimental to progress today. I was just on another show, and I called up, you know, and I was, you know, I'm a humorous type person. I can enjoy a laugh just like anyone else. And I asked him, was that Comedy Central? I say, have I contacted Comedy Central? Because they were talking about things that meant absolutely nothing. As one guy said, it was hot air from a buffalo. I kind of like that caption. And they were talking about foreign affairs. Now, it's like the conscious, we call them sometimes the conscious brothers, how they can resolve the mysteries of the universe, but they can't pay their damn rent. And so, you know, you've got to have some practicality here. That's what Dr. Anderson is talking about when he says you're behaving inappropriately. Your behavior is out of order. I recommended that you can get other people in on this too, because other people are lessons in life. They're actual lessons, and because of their behavior. So I say, you know, Asians are probably one of the most unsung and least publicized people, right? Would you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, but they kick ass like nobody's business.
That's true. That is so true.
In fact, I'm probably going to work with a couple of them shortly. But they kick ass like nobody's business. And a lot of this is stupid. See, you've got to weed the people out who are worthless and who are about nothing. Let them look from the outside. And, you know, I gave that standard. And this particular group, you know, they chopped it around, and some say you can never reach that standard. One guy, I forget the pronunciation of his name, you may know him, but he calls in. He'll probably call in shortly. But at any rate, he said something to the effect that the standard that I utilize is the white man's standard superimposed upon black people. And, you know, I don't mind going a round or two with him, because I have to point out to him that that's not true. Money will work in anybody's pocket. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Damn right it will. Money doesn't care what your race is, what your name is. If you have money in your pocket, you can use it to get what you want. Is that true or is that false?
No, that is true.
So his premise, even though he may have a point, what happens is a lot of people are not trained in how to think. Thinking, I mean, some people just think we do it naturally. We do to a degree. But in this, we're in a fairly sophisticated society. So we have to actually be trained how to think according to societal norms and, you know, areas of expertise and progressiveness. You have to be trained how to think. So anyway, I use those three standards that I use with you, and I don't know if you've committed those to memory or not. You probably should if you're going to be personally effective. But those three standards will apply to anybody at any time.
Yeah, they actually do. And
this one gentleman was talking about, well, investing in black banks. I think a better thing would be credit unions. Credit unions are actually better than banks because they're owned by the members. And but he doesn't understand. He tries to be of an African origin, and he really doesn't understand what's going on. For the most part, he does understand some things. I got it, but he doesn't understand if a person, if you talk about banking, if banks are offering safety and a decent return, people who have money will do what?
Spend it, save it, and spend it at the same time. Use it to their advantage. They use it to make more money.
Deposit it in those institutions.
Right. Use it to make more money.
But if they don't have any money, what are they going to deposit? The lint out of their pockets?
True.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So. Becoming financially solvent should be one of the first orders of business of many people.
Right. And my opinion is that what Brother Malcolm was actually talking about, just like Claude Anderson does in his book, the vertical integration. You know, vertical integration. You know, don't be, like you say, don't settle for the little thing. You know, go and get, you know, use our resources and get and own some things. Get some resources. You know, not just settle for, you know, what you can get and be happy with. Basically, you know, get your house in the suburbs and you happy with that. But you still
okay,
working
the
terminology, for
somebody else. I don't know if you've gotten this far in the book, but he talks about vertically structured business. You understand the concept that he's using there, vertically structured?
Mm-hmm.
The particular group owns it from the point of production, you actually have three sectors. I know tertiary is the third sector, and you have, I'll think of them in a minute. But what he actually means is that you own the product from its origin to its distribution. Okay, that's
right.
By vertically structured.
Correct.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you own the product or service from its origin to its distribution. If you talk about agriculture, which is most important, that's very crucial. That's what you call one of the sine qua non. You know, you own your stores. This business is owned by a particular group. It's your food chain. It's your food source. So you own it from the planting in the fields to the harvesting to the distribution to the various outlets and everything in between. That's called vertically structured enterprise.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. See? Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, And I still say that's what Brother Malcolm was basically talking about.
Well, anybody who is going to talk about growth cannot avoid that. That is essential to the growth of any group. King talked about it extensively. He talked about it in the form of a check, you know, that it's a check issued with insufficient funds to a particular people. And he was saying that's inappropriate. That's not that's just bad. That's immoral. That check should be cashable. In other words, it should be negotiable. He talked about the check bouncing that was issued to blacks. And so, any person who's going to talk about you got to have resources. We're in a country It is all about resources, the liberty. You can have as much freedom as you want to buy a pork chop, but if you don't have any money to buy a pork chop, what does that freedom really advantage you? Nothing.
Nothing.
You need funds to make your liberty effective.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. That's the thing. So that test, that three-tier test, and a lot of people, I'm going to say, they don't want a standard. If you look at most people, they don't want a standard. If they're stupid, they want to remain stupid. When you adopt a standard, you have a measuring tool. You have a guideline. You have a yardstick. And you'll find most crazy people don't want that. They don't want that because now they have a something to be held accountable to.
Mm. That's yeah. True. You know what? That is so true. That is so true. Let's see. Let me get Chef Rob. Bring Chef Rob in. No, I'm sure he has a lot to say on the subject as
well.
Another
thing, I think, you know, success has to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be successful, it has to be talked. It has to be talked about. It has to be examined and analyzed. And that's what successful people do, groups of successful people. They analyze success. What is it? What do I need to do to be successful? And they are specific. They're specific. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. Getting back to the thing you're talking about, Martin Luther King and the check, he said, "It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice." Now, that's from his I Have a Dream speech. Just wanted to get that on out there. You know, so you're right. He did mention it.
Yeah, but what he's quoting now is the preamble to the Constitution and the Constitution. He was a brilliant man, without a doubt.
Right.
That guy,
right.
He was absolutely brilliant. But he's quoting the Constitution. That is what he's premising his argument on. That's what that argument right there speaks of, is the U.S. Constitution. And the preamble, I consider that... You know, virtue, it's the Constitution, too, even though I know some scholars will make a demarcation. But at any rate, yeah, he's quoting the Constitution.
Exactly. Oh, okay. All right, let me get Rob in here. Okay, Rob, you there? Chef Rob?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, man?
I'm right. How you doing? Hello, Mr. Solutions.
Hey, Rob, what's up?
How you feeling, man? Okay, I just typed in the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and make you a cake, a three-tier cake, and I'm going to include the eggshells and some crushed glass. So,
oh, Lord.
I just came in, and I was trying to go ahead and get caught up. I had some work to do. But I just wanted to go ahead. One thing I typed in your chat room was that some of the things that I've seen from some of Martin's teachings and some of his speeches and the same thing with Malcolm. I think they were pretty much saying almost the same thing, but in different ways. Malcolm was more like, hey, look, let's use force to defend yourself. And Martin was trying to go ahead and do it another way. But as far as going ahead and doing stuff for our people, they were pretty much on the same page.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And that's what I said. You know, Martin was all about doing it peacefully. And so was Malcolm, actually, you know, but he just had the belief that if you hit me upside my head, I should have the right to hit you back upside your head.
Exactly.
Keep moving, you know, and that basically that was the only difference between the two of them. But, you know, everybody's right. I mean, they both wanted, you know, the equality and freedom for our people, You know, but it can be argued that, you know, Malcolm kind of was led down a wrong path for a long time before he realized himself what the real deal was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could we agree with that?
I agree. You know, he began to, one of the things that I was saying about him is like, hey, he was saying, hey, even though I'm a Muslim, you know, let's all sit around the table and go ahead and talk. You know, you leave your religion and not ideology outside, and then come on in this room and let's talk. And that's kind of like what Claude Anderson was saying. I was looking at his YouTube speech or the Powernomics piece. That's what, you know, looking at that a while back made me go ahead and get his book. And I haven't really read the whole thing, but one of the things he was saying is, hey, look, you were born black first. That's it. You know, all that other stuff don't matter, and that's what you need to concentrate on.
That's a very good point. You know, I got a question here a few minutes ago on my phone. I'm going to put it out there. Could Mr. Claude Anderson be considered the new Martin Luther King or Malcolm X?
You want me? I don't think so. I think they're all individuals. And if you look around, if you go ahead and pay attention, like right now, the video Hidden Colors is out. Hidden Colors 2 is out. And Hidden Colors, the first one, had a lot of them in there. But the second one, Claude Anderson, is in there. I think a lot of them brothers could also be on that same level, the brothers and the sister. You know, Francis Chris Wilson is on there also. They can also be considered that. But they're doing it in their way.
Mm-hmm.
They're going ahead and trying to bring things out in their way, and I think they bring a lot of knowledge, and it's just some stuff that's being shut down. We're bombarded with a lot of nonsense, so the nonsense makes more, you know, that makes more sense to people than anything. What I mean is by, you know, the entertainment field. You can ask almost any black person in America about actors, entertainers of any kind. They can tell you that, but they couldn't tell you who are some of the richest individuals in the world and how they got there. One of the richest individuals is a black man. A lot of people don't even know that. He actually comes from Nigeria. So, you know, we're not really paying attention to what's going on. And how he got his riches is through manufacturing and agriculture.
All right. Okay. Mr. Solution, what do you think about that? The question. You there?
Well, yeah. I think, what was the question? I'm sorry.
Could Claude Anderson be considered the new Martin Luther King or Malcolm X?
Well, I don't think you need a new Martin Luther King or a new Malcolm X. I think what needs to be done is you have people who build upon previous work. See, today you don't need a Martin Luther King. You don't need a Malcolm X. They were right for their time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're not fighting the same type of war.
Wow.
They were very necessary. But now getting back to something that Rob said, and he's cutting his own throat, because even if I were a person who heard him speak like that and he wasn't speaking to me, I wouldn't do business with him. Because what if he intends that crushed glass or crushed eggshells for someone else, but it's mistakenly given to you?
Nah, that's your personal cake. I wouldn't do that to nobody else.
You see, anybody who thinks, and first of all, let me just say this, he thinks like a bitch.
Really?
And he has no reason to say something like that. I've seen him in your chat room, and he's a bitter-ass individual. And he needs to get into counseling, and he's rather stupid also. That could be considered a threat. And I don't know if you have a criminal background, but you might be headed toward one.
Wow. All that stuff you said.
I'm not talking to you at this juncture.
Wow. You are talking to me. With respect to
the question that you asked, Eric, I think that Dr. Anderson is an excellent personification for the present time in terms of the sophistication and actually the working out of the foundation that, of course, Malcolm and Dr. King laid. Okay, they laid an excellent foundation. Just as I said to you, their work culminated into the Civil Rights Act and its passage. And so I think it was, Lyndon Johnson who signed that into law?
Right, right. Yes, it was.
So the thing of it, but see, notice everybody else jumped on that bandwagon. Now, one of the things that Claude Anderson pointed out, he alerted me to this, he's a brilliant guy in and of his own right, but he pointed out the best form of affirmative, that's what the Civil Rights Act was supposed to be. It was supposed to be affirmative action or reparations for a disenfranchised people. But because the powers that be didn't want it to actually be that, they watered it down and allowed everyone else to jump on the bandwagon. And that was inappropriate. If you want to look at the best form of reparations, the American Indians have it. It's under the Bureau, it's under the Department of Interior, and it's the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And an example of that is they can issue a job offer or a job opening in that particular agency, and unless you are strictly of Indian blood and can prove it, they don't have to hire you. And so that's the kind of affirmative action that's specifically tailored to bring about the desired goal. That is to improve the conditions and to repay. That's what reparations mean, to repay. Mm-hmm. And every country does that, that is that acknowledges it's wrong to a particular group of people. A lot of people, the Jews are being reparated, the South Sea Islanders are being reparated, you know, the Reagan reparated, the Japanese American who were interned, I think it was Manzanow. So reparations are very, 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 very common among civilized nations. You follow?
I'm follow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Dr. Anderson gets to the work of operating in the modern, technologically sophisticated society, telling people what they must do fundamentally to improve their conditions. But he lays the hammer right on the nail where he says that white racism was a big problem in the past, much more so than today. Today, the real problem is black inappropriate behavior. And he talks about that extensively. And I think someone mentioned his YouTube presentations where he talks about this also.
Right. Rob had mentioned that. But let me ask you a question. So you I understand back then racism was, you know, running rampant and it was out in the open. So you wouldn't think that it's worse now, that it's hidden more now than it was back then?
No. What's worse now is what I just said. Do you understand black inappropriate? You'll probably come to that in the book. I'm sure he discusses that.
Yeah, he does.
It in his talk. But do you understand what black inappropriate behavior is? Let's unpack that just for a moment. Do you understand what the inappropriate behavior of a people that actually frustrates their own efforts to achieve a modicum of success?
Yes,
or the success that they feel they deserve? Do you understand
mm-hmm.
that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you want to talk about that a minute? Just give me some feedback so we'll be on the same page.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Rob.
Well, the thing that's most disturbing is that what we shouldn't paint a broad brush. You got to go ahead and pretty much go ahead and say those some of or a percentage of those people that are this way. Not everybody is like that. Not everybody black is engaged in inappropriate behavior. Okay, so you know that I kind of take offense to that. Okay, so your kid gets razor blades at the time.
Okay, let's see. All right, so you know, being that I've gone through the book, let's see. Collusion with the competition, social etiquette. You know, avoiding blackness. In other words, not. You know, they don't want to be associated with black folk or don't want to, you know, claim that they are black.
Let me throw something in there real quick because it feeds into what you're saying. It's one of those things where you're going through school and like after a couple of grade schools, we moved around a little bit. After a few grade schools, we moved into a predominantly white area. And so some of the black kids would go ahead and say things like, hey, look, you're sitting up front with the white boys. You're trying to be white. Well, I see today that that I think that a lot of blacks are doing the white man's bidding. They're going ahead and keep you down and do stuff to you. And it's more blacks that's going ahead and acting white than they think they are. You understand what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. And that's part of it. That's part of what Mr. Solution is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. Anything that softens, you know, the internal workings of a race, you know, or helps sabotage it. That's what I like to use, sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, denying, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I believe it is.
Yeah, because you got a whole lot of us that it's a lot of people. A lot of blacks think that, hey, look, this is where it's always been. This is where it's always been, and that's the even sadder part is that, you know, don't want to go ahead and look beyond. Okay, well, I'm a vet. You're a vet. Okay.
Uh huh.
You've traveled. I've traveled. So when you get outside of America, you go ahead and see that, hey, look, the world's a whole lot different than what we've been told it was. And one of the things I go ahead and I try to go ahead and tell people, because I was trying to come at this one brother who was making a lot of negative comments about Africa, and also listened to Jesse Lee Peterson thanking the Europeans for slavery. I try to tell him, hey, look, man, things ain't always been that way. You know, things have been a little bit different. But in America, what you see on your street is just what you see on your street, okay? When you go ahead and you leave, if you can try to leave and go somewhere else, and if you can get out of the country, you see there's a whole totally different world out there. It's nothing like what you see. And there's a reason why you see those images. It's a reason why you go ahead and you see those images of, like, the Red Cross. I'm against the Red Cross. The main reason I'm against the Red Cross is because it's all about money. A lot of these places go ahead for every dollar they bring in, 95 cents. Of that dollar is going toward administrative costs and going in their pocket.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's a lot of stuff we need to look at.
Hmm. Okay. All right, Mr. Solution, you there?
Yeah, I'm working a little bit. But what's up? What was the question? Did you have a question or what?
No, I thought you wanted to expound on what your question was. You know, basically what I said, anything that that internally softens, you know, a race or works against the achievement of the race.
Oh, you're talking about the
inappropriate behavior.
Racial.
Right.
We use let's say ethnic, because racial,
okay,
like
ethnic. Okay.
Humans are all of the same race. That was just
okay.
Racist BS. No, but you're talking about what. The internal strife and the inappropriate behavior that Dr. Anderson talked about, and you were naming some of it, presumably?
Yes.
Yeah, and I didn't hear all of it, but I think I heard you say internal strife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just working against your best interest. What were some of the other points that you made? Internal strife.
Avoiding blackness.
Avoiding blackness. Now, what does that
mm-hmm.
mean? What does that mean?
Okay. As per, let me get back to it here real fast.
But that's okay. I thought you knew. That's just kind of an ambiguous term, avoiding blackness. That's just like when a guy said the other day he was defining black, and I asked him to define that, and then he proved that there is no such thing, because he said it's a concept, but blacks, except for the talented 10th, they tend to be in concert, at least on the economic and social basis. You know, you got your debutantes, you got your links, there's another one, too. I draw a blank on it sometimes. But, you know, there are your so-called upper echelon black organizations, and they do pretty well. They are some of your professionals. They generally are college-educated or business owners and that sort of thing. That's the reason I encourage you one day to get some of them on. And, you know, you can get get some Asians on. Asians are very, very good. They work, I'm going to say, they work without a lot of fanfare. They don't have a lot of politicians. Maybe they have a few in the local area. But they operate on the local area, which is really where you one is the most effective.
So, okay. Now, I've been around a lot of Asians. I also live in California, and I spent a few years.
Put razor blades in his cakes.
Yeah, don't worry about that. You'll get right through that with some X-Lax. The thing is,
idiot. This guy's a joke.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people feel about
you. You are a fool.
Yes, I am. Okay. Anyway, with a lot of Asians, the thing is that they have a better family structure, and I like how they treat the family. It's a more of a calm setting, and everybody's like that, but it's more of a calm setting. I mean, like, obviously you never travel, but it's more of a calm setting than we have. We have so much turmoil in a lot of our places, and that's what go ahead and bleeds over into a whole lot of disrespect and just almost hatred for one another. Hello? Yeah, I'm still here. What happened?
Oh, okay. I don't know. It quiet. It got quiet. Okay. Hold on. Let me bring Supreme in. He wants to add something to the conversation as well. Supreme, you there?
Yes, brother.
Okay. You on the air?
So, you know, what we going through, what's the discussion take? Are we still dealing with the weep or Malcolm?
Oh, you're breaking up real bad.
Mm. Yeah. You changed the mic like you said you was going to do?
Wait, let me just check.
All right. Well,
give me a second.
Okay, just raise your hand when you're ready again, okay? All right. Okay, I must admit I missed what was last said because I was dealing with Supreme. So somebody catch me up real fast. I can put my 8 cents in.
Oh, what I was talking about was basically the thing with dealing with the Asians. Okay, you know, the Asians have a system where it's more of a thing. They're a lot more family oriented, and I see other groups that are like that too. But I see a lot of how the family means everything, the kids mean everything, and that's why I used to go ahead and be upset when I would see other groups let their kids run wild through the stores. But I see that's also, I think that's just part of the teachings. You know, let them be free a little bit. You know, they can run wild and rampant, but they slowly go ahead and calm them down. But when I, just like with my mom, it's like, hey, you cut up in the store, my mom would go ahead and reach over and smack you right in the mouth. Wow. You know, so.
Right. You know, as the saying used to be, you embarrass me, I embarrass you.
So, right.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, when it comes to Asians, though, as far as businesses, I have to agree with Mr. Solution on that. That they work, you know, they work like under the radar. They really do.
Yes,
but they
do.
But they have businesses everywhere. Everywhere,
right.
And the funny thing is, you know, for three, 5, 6 months, you see the same crew, and then next thing you look up, you go back in the same business. It's a whole different crew.
Because it's the family. It's that business is what's supporting the family, and that's why you'll see a lot of them go ahead and work in the stores. Even with Arabs, the Koreans have a name for that. I think it's called Kai, where they go ahead, they'll get money together. And they'll go ahead and support one idea, and they'll go ahead and they like to create a shop. But everybody's got to work in that shop. Everybody got to spend time in that shop. So when they go ahead, they'll go ahead and they say, hey, look, well, this shop's making us money. Let's see when it's time to expand. They'll take some family members and go ahead and set up another place, and they go ahead and they use that money, and they keep passing that money around. A lot of blacks in America don't have that. I see other groups do that. I've seen Mexicans do that. I've seen a lot of brothers from Africa do that. I've seen blacks in America don't have that. It's that distrust that we have that's really, really messing up. What you going to do with that money kind of stuff? So, and
you
then,
know,
go ahead, brother.
No, well, what I was going to say, you know, if that is the case, then with us having the privilege of having such dynamic leaders and spokesmen such as Brother Malcolm and Brother Martin, why are we not getting the picture then?
Because
what
I think we're bombarded by fantasy. You when you don't go ahead and have a sense of who you are, it's a thing where black versus African. Okay, you know, blacks, where they come from. So if you don't got that sense of that root thing, you know, that messes your head up. So you know, you kind of out there in limbo in a sense. So it's a terrible dynamic. I'm trying to get my words together because I'm dealing with something else too.
Okay, all right. Let me bring Supreme back in. He said he's ready. All right, Supreme, you on the air? Supreme. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
I'm a
No, you still choppy, man.
For fuck's sake. I'm going to call back in. I'm going to call back in, man.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, depending on what time of day it is over there, you know, his connection may be just horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, and that's the question. You know, so if I was someone, you know, let's say just in that era listening to either one of them, which side would I take? You know, that's something that came to my mind yesterday as we were talking. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, and both of these brothers, you know, they had different philosophies on how to get there, but they were talking about the same thing.
Same thing, about the same. Yeah. And that's why I hate to say this, but I kind of agree with Sister Solution that you need today.
All right, that's enough of that.
No more swings.
Okay, no more swings. All right.
But we kind of, we have a lot of those people today. And that's kind of what I was saying. We have a lot of those people today. A lot of people is out there, and there's been a lot of people out there that it's been out there for years. A lot of people just getting hip to some of the stuff that Marcus Garvey was saying. So we have had a lot of people that's been out there, even Frederick Douglass, and a lot of people. The blueprints and the plans have already been put out there for you. So, you know, you got to go ahead and to grasp that stuff.
Wow. So, as Mr. Solution was saying yesterday, we just need to get out there and educate our dang on selves and get to moving and get off our butts then, basically.
Yeah, but, you know. Yeah,
but? Is there a but?
Yeah.
What is the but?
Okay, so because some young men I'm working with right now who had never been in trouble, okay, and it seems like just because they have adopted this stress that a lot of younger people have, that's why they get harassed, and that's why they're constantly being harassed by the police to go ahead and put papers on them and to mess with them. And you look like a gangbanger and blah, 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 blah. So one of the young men, I'm real good friends with his dad. And the young man is actually, this boy's a straight A student. And he's one of the top football players in the area. And his dad does pretty good. And his dad was pretty upset. And so his dad is trying to go ahead and file a suit against the city. Because they just keep constantly harassing him. He's really trying to go ahead and target that officer first. Because the same officer is following his son around, and his son isn't doing anything but going to school, maybe go ahead and go to his girlfriend's house, maybe go practice, and then come home. And this just seems like the same officer is always there in his face.
Uh-huh.
So we got situations like that, and it's kind of hard to go ahead and say that, hey, look, we get up off your butt and do something when you got outside influences trying to go ahead and ruin your life for whatever person.
But Rob, I hear this all the time about the outside influences and what have you. But what about the inside influences?
Oh yeah. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm not totally defending. 2 weeks ago. I'm not totally defending the jerks out here. 2 weeks ago, yesterday, I got my foundation is dealing with farming and agriculture, so I was checking out an urban farm.
Uh huh.
And I can see the individual now. The where the farm is, the individual is like at the end of the farm, at the end of the yard, shooting toward a grammar school.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I was with the sister. I pushed it down. I tried to slide on the wall, and I was trying to catch him, but he took off because he finished off his, you know, pop, pop, pop. He finished off his clip and then started running. And the only thing I can say, like, what's the point of that? So them individuals, oh, I come at them hard, real hard.
All righty then. Okay, let's try Supreme one more time. One more time. All right, Mr. Supreme. That's horrible. That's even worse, Supreme.
Bro. Is that what you don't want me on there?
No, man. I barely can hear. I hear you like every five words or something like that.
You hear that?
Hold on.
Yeah, but you know, but I mean, when? Okay, here's my question. You know, when are we gonna stand up and take responsibility for our, you know, our own downfall? Yes, we know it was in the earlier years. Yes, it was caused by, you know, inequality and, you know, all the good terms that we like to use. But now, well, I mean,
yeah.
What?
Like I was saying, but it's okay. Like yourself, even Mr. Solutions and Brother Supreme, our voices are not being heard. Okay, because we're drowned out by the nonsense. That nonsense seems to make more sense to our people. We're drowned out by them, and people, I don't want to hear that. I'm gonna go ahead and do this. I can go ahead and do that. Man, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating to talk to some of these people, young people, old people. It's really frustrating.
Am I back now? Am I clearly heard?
Yeah, you back now, Supreme.
I'm all right, yeah?
Yeah, you all right.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm going to say? I agree with most that. I agree with everything that Chef Rob, you know. Chef Rob is a man, I've got a mind like myself, you know. And what I'm saying, but you can't put the Arab man and the Indian man's and the China man's success with ours. Because at the end of the day, they wouldn't have got to where they've got without up on the backs of black Negroes like us. In their country, they have a caste system. So they're dealing with all the shit that we deal with. And that's why you get them darker Indians who like to come to Britain and come to America. Why? Because they see the real niggas. They see us out here. So they see it as though when they come up here, they're going to get treated on a higher level than what they do in their own lands. Because they got niggas in Britain,
all right,
and America.
All right, Supreme.
And
it's not using the N-word. Supreme, we're not using them.
Sorry. That's the reason why. They actually come over to America, Britain, France, Holland, to take advantage of us. Because they understand the caste system. They came from a country with caste system. Right? So don't think that everything's cool in them countries there. And they come straight out of a third world country. So obviously, we see our families, especially me, who's a first generation in Britain, I've seen my family work all their lives, right? I had one first generation came to England, right? And the one wage, yeah, they could support their whole family, yeah, and buy a house. When my dad's time, you needed, my dad's time, I'm seeing them now. I mean, at least they provided a house. My dad's generation, my mum and dad, they're barely getting houses for themselves, yeah? They just... It's taking them all their life to buy a house. You understand? Between them. And now in the generation that we're in now, my generation, they've taken away... We can't even get a house. We've got to work for at least 10 to 20 years to buy a house before we can even put money on the house. Then we've got to wait. You know how I calculated how much it would take, how long it would take for someone on average wage now to buy a house. It'll take you 20 years just to put a down payment on the house. And then to pay the mortgage, you'll be paying that mortgage until you're 70. And this money is just going to get what? It's going to get higher and higher as inflation carries on, yeah? Let's talk real thing. The older generation had more advantages than the newer generation. Even me. When I was coming up there, they were modern apprenticeships. We used to get paid for going to college. Now, you used to have none of that. So let's be real. They're dealing with some harder effort than what you guys dealt with or the 40-plus, 30-plus people were dealing with. Bottom line. You know, you have to see that. When you see the youth still going around hurting people, or even you hear a youth complaining, he's got good right. Because in your time, it was easier. Bottom line, man. You see what I'm saying? And I'm a man who studied international politics, yeah? So 20th century politics. So when you want to, you go out and stuff, you want to try and dispute what I'm saying, I'll hit you up with knowledge all day, but you can't be looking in knowledge if you want to debate what I'm saying. And
well,
you know what I mean?
You know what, Supreme? I'm going to have to debate that because I can't believe that they have it easier now than I did when I was coming up.
You see what it is, though, Eric? What you see is easy is technology. That's all you're seeing. You just see that it's easier for the youths them now because you see all the technology. Technology, and if you know about technology and if you see the programming, all that this technology does is program us. The military are dealing with technology. I've got technology and innovations in weapons that are 40 years above the civil of the people of their country. You understand? So when you get your little iPhone that's got little holograms and shit, say, and holograms and that, don't think the military have got something bigger and better than that. The technology that we're getting now are redundant technology. That's the reason why you think it's easier, because you see the technology. That is the reason why. And access to knowledge is greater. But they had the internet in your time, but they weren't ready to put that out. Let's be real, man. That's the only reason why you're saying that times is easier for the youth than now, when that's a load of rubbish. That's rubbish. Biggest pie I've ever heard in my life. Go on.
All righty, then.
Let me tell you, yeah, my brother. When my grandparents first came to England, if they lost their job, they told me stories of when they came to England and they had a job, they could lose their job by it. They start work at 9 o'clock. They could have said, well, I don't like this job at 11 o'clock. By 12 o'clock, they could have found a new job. In the same day, if you put your job now, you might be searching for weeks, maybe months, maybe years. Or maybe you will never work again and you'll be stuck on benefits, welfare and food stamps. Let's be real, man. And people used to stay with their family. The programming and the divisiveness and the separation is much greater than now, than in this day and age now, than in your day when you were growing up there, coming up there. You know how many kids don't grow up with their mother and father? Not in this day and age, into your day and age. You understand? Kids don't live with much higher, 50%. Of 30 years ago, this is before I was born, yeah? 30 years ago, it's gone up 50% of single parenting in the nation. So you the math, man. This is why we're like this, you know? And I was a child of no parents, no mother, no father. So when I talk real. I don't talk no shit. And I don't hear what I'm saying. I don't kick. Around the solution, you know. I kick down the solution.
Okay.
I ain't a builder. I'm a destroyer.
You're
not rebuild. Once I've destroyed it, I rebuild after that. Let's get that straight.
Well, you sound like America now. Well, they destroy every damn thing. And when they get finished, they got to rebuild it.
I'm a destroyer of lies.
Listen, Supreme. And here's my thought process on what you're saying. All right. Number one, to go ahead with your argument. I'm gonna stay on your argument now. Now,
yeah.
You know why it was so easy back then to get another job? Because everybody looked out for someone. It wasn't a neighborhood, it was a community. And everybody worked together.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
Industrial.
No, that's old crap, Supreme. Now listen, I heard you. Listen to me now, Supreme. Listen to me.
All right.
Now, it was a community back then. Everybody looked out. I don't care who you was. You moved in the neighborhood, you know, within a couple of days, somebody came to visit you and say, welcome to the neighborhood, blah, 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 and you got to know them. Today, you know why so many single parents out there and single families? Because they choose to be single parents. Back then, nobody wasn't choosing to be a single parent.
No.
Let's be honest with this. If you want to be really honest, nobody was choosing to be a single parent back then. Nobody. But now it's the norm. It's not really the norm, but it's the good thing to be. You know, everybody want to be independent. I don't need no man. I don't need this.
No,
so don't give me that bull crap. Okay, they make it harder today because they are too lazy to get out there and do anything you want to. Back then, you know how you find a job the next day? Because when you lost the first one, before going home and telling anybody you lost that job, you out looking for another one automatically. So don't tell me that. I'm not buying that, Supreme.
No. This is why I said I studied politics in the 20th century politics. I'm a master. Britain had more jobs. Hear what I'm saying to you. Britain has more
politics too. But you see what he's thinking is.
Listen to what I'm saying. Britain and America were more industrial nations in the 60s, right?
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? They had more jobs than they had they had more jobs than they had people to give them out to, right? Especially in Britain. When Margaret Thatcher came in and got rid of the factories, that's what killed Britain. That's what killed the jobs for people in Britain. Do you understand? That's the reason why.
You know what? Claude Anderson was kind of mentioning that, and he was kind of saying somehow, he was saying that in the Powernomics, the clip, he was talking about how technology, he was saying, hey, people were saying get involved in technology. And then he brought up the thing, and I didn't make the connection at first, but he talked about the – at one time, they had elevator operators.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
So and then when the new technology came in, you didn't need nobody standing there. Go ahead and open the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
So when they brought like Margaret Thatcher bringing in the factories, it was like, okay, well, the factories are pretty much hurting the environment. We can move these factories somewhere else, and they can kill off the people. So, you know, we can still get the goods from that. You understand where I'm going?
No, but it was a lie because – the way the factory business was carrying on, right, they would have had to eventually pay us more money. That's why they shipped these factories out, America and Britain, to China, so they can pay them lower wages.
That was my point.
Okay. And I don't need to read Claude Anderson book that me too does, because he only knows about Marcus Garvey and Claude Anderson. So I hope you heard that, me too, and you phone your ass in. Yeah, because he only knows two people. I've read more books than he's had hot meals. You understand? I've read more books than him and his family put together. Yeah, that.
We're supposed to talk and working it out with ourselves, man. We're supposed to be arguing.
Okay. You know what, brother? Let me say this. Okay, I'm gonna extend an olive branch to Mr. Solutions. Okay, I bake you a nice cake, and I won't include the razor blades and eggshells. Okay,
let me say something, right? You see, guys, like I like Mr. Solutions, right? But he does a disservice, an intellectual disservice to our people. When he told our people we should stop complaining and this, that, and the other, when he's doing well in business, right, and he intellectually knows that we've been held down. I don't ever get at black folk for complaining because I understand the programming. I understand that we're getting beaten down and our necks are getting stepped on. I understand. So I just try to give solution. That's all I do. But I would never criticize our people for complaining. And I'm saying a guy like that who's been on this earth much longer than me, right, does our people an intellectual disservice. Just like our Jelly Belly Sharpton and Messy Jesse. Just like that. Because when Malcolm X was doing his thing, he was using his intellectualness, yeah, to help our people. Not to try and beat down our people and tell our people we've got to stop complaining and shit like that. He was trying to bring us up, help us, even though Elijah Muhammad was the real brains behind it. I don't like the way that people put out Malcolm all the time and no one don't say nothing about Elijah, because Elijah was the real brains behind the whole thing. If there
was Elijah,
no Elijah
was a
Muhammad,
fraud, man.
He would not have had Malcolm X.
Elijah Muhammad was a fraud, and that's what changed. That's why Malcolm eventually changed his mind, because Elijah Muhammad was saying one thing and doing something totally different, you know, than when he was preaching. So, no. When Malcolm realized that was going on, he started thinking for himself, and that's when he started making more sense. That's when he realized that everything that was being told is not everything that it is.
No one didn't bring up what he used to do, pimp out our women, right?
Well, everybody knows what he used to do. It's not a secret.
Why can't our man, people read the Bible and people call out David, Solomon. These men had multiple women. And the Most High was not happy with David. He had seven women, and there was one woman in particular he did not like. He wasn't for that. No talk about that, but people still talk about David from the Bible. People still talk about Solomon from the Bible. The man had 300 wives and 600 concubines. The Most High wasn't happy with that, but people still put this guy up on a higher pedestal. Bottom line, and Abraham and all these guys. These guys had more than one wife. But you want to go and beat down a man like Elijah Muhammad? He did not rape none of those women, did he? What business was it of what's his name, of Malcolm X to be even going and talking his business like that after the man helped him and many other people? What black man now goes to prison and reforms ex-criminals and pimps and prostitutes? Who does that now? No one. That's why we're in the situation we're in today. Mm. Anyone got anything for that?
Rob, you going to get
some
of that?
Fire. Cause I'm on fire.
you gonna get some of that, Rob?
Well, no, brother, you gonna hit. You deal with that.
Mr. Solution, you there?
Yeah, I was.
I know you gonna get some of this.
First of all, I appreciate his passion, but he misrepresents what I stand for. I don't say people shouldn't complain. I say you should match that complaint. Okay, let me give an analogy if I can. It's just like when you're paying your bills in. You don't just send in the stub. You send in a check to satisfy the stub or the debt. And so I don't say that people shouldn't complain. I'm actually very much in favor of people stating their claim, stating their problem. But now my point is, what's your solution? See, because
my solution may be completely deluded. No, no.
I have the power to change.
No.
I need to change.
Wait a minute, so let him finish.
I'll say.
Yeah, I feel I have the power to change whatever I need to change. So sure, I will raise complaints, but I will also, go for the solution to resolve that complaint. Now, and I don't think he presented that part of what I say. I hate whiners. I mean,
no, I apologize. I apologize.
Yeah, but and I apologize too, because if I had not made that very lucid, then I haven't done my job communicating. But Eric, is that your perception of at least what I say? I never say people shouldn't complain. In fact, I say framing the problem, which is the complaint, is 50% of the solution.
Okay. I agree with that, and that's what I say. I mean,
yeah, I never say don't complain. I will say don't just complain.
Right, exactly. Just because you're complaining, what are you doing about it? You know, that's what I always say. If you're going to complain, have a solution or be working
for it. Right, and my thing is, I used to teach conflict resolution, and I can just say with that, they say if you can do it, it's not bragging. I taught literally scores of thousands of people, well, I won't say a score, but in excess of 10,000 people with respect to complaint resolution. And so my position is, and it just may be my training is always, when I hear a complaint, I'm always listening for, well, what's the solution to this complaint? What's the solution? And you would be amazed, a lot of people don't have a solution in mind. They're just in it for the drama. That's the way they've been trained. That's what they are about. So that's my particular position. But never mistake my position to say that you don't complain. Sure, if something is wrong, that would be like telling a baby, don't cry if a pin is sticking it. Sure, you should cry. You want it, but you want the pin to stop. And then once the pin stops sticking the baby stops crying. Does that make sense?
No, I agree. I agree with everything that you're saying, brother. And my teachings is of Elijah Muhammad, and I'm just of the same thought. Do for self. That's what I keep on trying to tell black folk. Do for yourself. You see what I'm trying to say?
Oh, by the way, that was a few years since they used the Huggies now, or... whatever it is. They use Velcro. They don't use the pins anymore. But that's just an old-fashioned analogy.
Okay.
But, yeah, complain away, but have a solution in mind. I don't complain very much. Trust me.
Same as me. Same as me. I don't complain either. I know it'd be hard to believe, but I don't complain. And if you listen to my show, you'll get the message of what I'm trying to put through.
Hey, put your link on Eric's show. That's what you got to advertise a little bit more. P.S. At least I don't know about your show. Did you know about his show, Eric?
Yes. I just got to get the times down when he'd be on. I know he usually sometimes he'd be on during my show, then sometimes he'd be on 5:30 in the afternoon.
Well,
Eric, P.S. Who has to put the listener? Can he put in there a recent listener?
No.
Because let me see. I'm looking at your page now, and I don't think I see him. But
you
can put recent listener, and then that way we can go directly to his page.
Yeah.
I've got a talk today on how niggas,
uh-huh.
Go into the how we dress it. I don't like how we dress. We've got big men who are nearly 50. They dress like kids. It's not set. It's giving us the right example. I feel it's not at past. It was like father like son. Now it's like son like father. You know. You got the daddy's trying to be cool like the sons, and that's right. We've got to differentiate, and that's why we're the laughing stock of the world.
Oh, okay, but before we move on to that subject right there, Mr. Solution, you want to comment on the statement that Supreme made about the Prophet Elijah Muhammad, the late Prophet Elijah Muhammad, that he was in control of everything? Even though he was not practicing what he preached,
he never told no one to have one woman. I've never read anything where he said that you can't have more than one woman. He never said that. If you can manage, you can afford it, because there's not enough good brothers out there. There's more women on earth than there are men. Now, someone has to cater for those women who ain't gonna. Some woman's gonna be no matter what. So at least they could go with some righteous men who are taking care of their families. I don't think that's bad. And vice versa, if there was more women...
Some women are going to have to be what?
I'm saying that there's this world, right, there's more women on this earth than there are men. So some woman's going to get left out, right? Some woman's going to get left by themselves. And I'm saying if there's righteous men out there who are prepared to take them, it's a man that can afford to have more than... woman, why not? I can't afford to have more than one woman. So I've got my one woman, right? So I ain't even entertaining that. And I can just about handle my one woman. So I wouldn't advise for a woman to want to come under my feet. You understand? And I'll be real about that. I can't handle more than my woman, you know, and my child, you know. You see what I'm trying to say? If there was more men in this world than there were women, then it's only right that the women to take on field for men, you know, that's just how it is. But the way the world's built, the way the world is, it's in disproportion of too many women. There's more women than there are men. So therefore, they've got to be with a man, unless you want them to turn lesbian at the end of it, you know.
Yeah, I don't think your analysis of that. P.S. is one-to-one. I think there are other very important elements that you've not concluded. Pretty much in most cultures, there's just a slightly, maybe a 2-3, maximally a 4 percentage point difference between men and women. Men and women are usually pretty much equally matched. In a society. Now, of course, in some societies, wars can deplete the number of men, but that's not the case. Let me just go ahead and speak to the immediate situation. That is not the case in the United States, that there's this huge imbalance between men and women. Just as Eric said a moment ago, and whenever we're talking about, fundamental philosophy, human philosophy, we recognize that choices are crucial. Choices are very important. So I'm going to actually proceed to that particular position. It is the choices that women make that determine their status in life. You follow me? That has far more to do than any of those barriers that you just, you know, expressed.
Okay.
It is the choice that women make, whether they are single, lesbian, whether they are with a good man, a bad man. It's understood that women, based on the drama and excitement and the attempt to change men, women generally choose the men, even if they're inferior men. Women tend to like those men more. So I would go back to the issue of choice that women make, as opposed to any of the other issues you raised that have more to do with the woman's status. Does that make sense? Do you follow that, Eric?
I agree.
Yes, I'm following with that. Yeah, I agree with that. Go ahead, Supreme. You agree with that?
No, I agree with that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What the heck?
I told you. If you tell me facts, if you tell me facts, I ain't gonna disagree with you. I'm unreasonable. I don't think I'm unreasonable. I'm in accord with what's right. That's all I'm in accord with. If it's right, I'm in accord with what's right and what's wrong. I'm trying to deal with what's right at the end of the day. So, you know, that's all I care about.
And I appreciate that on Supreme. And, you know, there are different types of information or different types of proof. There's logical proof. There's historical proof. There's evidence proof. And there are different ways. Now, I've mainly used the transitive law of equality and definitional truth. And I apply that to any other truth because that tends to help out a great deal. No, but I appreciate his recognition of that reality.
All right. That's cool. That's cool.
You know what? I'm going to have to go now, you know, because my show's on.
Okay.
So, you know, you guys are free to join me on this show.
Yeah, that's right. Don't be trying to steal none of my listeners, Supreme.
No, we never do. Brother, I try my best here not to step on your feet.
I know,
I like
man. I know.
I'm just, come to your show.
I'm just messing with you, Supreme. All right. I'll see you in a few, man.
All right, then, my brother.
All right.
Talk about how black folks dress, black men dress.
Okay. Yeah, I want a piece of that anyway. But okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
All
right. Hi.
All right, y'all. That was Supreme. He's going to do his show, Carbon Radio. That's what he falls under, Carbon Radio. So if y'all see it out there, check him out.
Carbon?
Now, Carbon, yeah, Carbon Radio.
Yeah, I hope he posts his link in your site. I've got to go out and do a little, do a couple of chores. But, yeah, I'm definitely going to tune in and listen to his show.
Okay. But he got the link posted in the chat room.
Hey, are you going to come to my show too, man?
Man, look, I be trying to catch all y'all, but y'all be up too late for me.
You know, well, see, like right now, okay, I'm resting up between jobs. Like last week was really, really hectic, and it's about to go ahead and get really hectic again for me in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I'm taking a break and trying to catch up on some paperwork. I got some contracts and some other things, some proposals to put out. Excuse me. So I can go ahead and catch a show, and I like coming here. It's pretty cool. I enjoy myself.
Well, thank you.
You know what? Let me say something else because I wish Joe was on the line. I'd like to go ahead and tell Joe. I remember hearing Joe almost when Blog Talk first began.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she used to come on, but his sister used to come out of Milwaukee. Her name was Cheryl, and he used to be on there. And a lot of times Joe did open my eyes up a whole lot of stuff, man, but. And I like to go ahead and tell him some other things. But, you know, it's a lot of times Joe has a lot of information. And I've heard Mr. Solutions around Blog Talk a couple of times. I know he goes to that other show he was talking about with the white racist. That's kind of a new show.
Yeah. Well, I've listened to that, too. And, you know, that's all I'm going to say. I've listened to that, too. You know, I'm going to have to get a piece of that one day myself, but not right now. But anyway,
that's a different type of show, Eric. On that show, Well, there is some passion released, and I think, like I say, probably race, gender, and class are the three most under-discussed subjects in America, but they are what drive America. And on that particular show, I like the host, by the way, even though I point out that he is not sufficiently equipped to really state the cause, and he even acknowledges that. See, he's totally wrapped up in race, which is kind of stupid, and I will call him a loser because I think that's where his separatist, racist observations and inclinations originate from, his personal lack of success. And a number of other people, who I think accurately so, explain that same thing to him. Mm-hmm. And so on that particular show, you know, we get a little bit wild, but
a little bit, okay.
So it's okay. His ratings are boosted, and he's not just talking into the mic, into dead air, as it were. Mm-hmm. So Poverty has come on the show, and a number of other people have come on the show. So I think some good points get made as a result of that, and so that's the reason I participate in the show myself.
I wanted to back up a little bit.
Okay.
About, you was talking about Elijah Muhammad, and Malcolm going ahead and exposing the women that bore his child, that had, gave him children. We don't go ahead and kind of follow up on that a little bit, which a lot of times for security reasons I understand why they keep them separate and private. But I really like to go ahead and see, you know, right now, you know, where are they now? What's going on with them? Because you don't hear anything more about them. You put it out there to go ahead and destroy the man. But okay, so you still now you're paying attention to what we're doing to those kids.
Now that's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Oh, Eric, let me throw a point in regarding that. I heard you ask a question about that earlier. I would think that the Black Muslim movement, in my estimation, was totally a reaction to racist America. I think its origin was definitely the result. When I hear them speak and I hear everything they say, and understandably so, it was about race. And I can see why they had an issue with Christianity, because the white church was a complete jerk, and it didn't stand up
true.
For what was right, because they were profit-motivated. It was, and, you know, slavery was all about greed. That was an inhumane economic decision.
Oh wait, let me say this. So you go on to that other dude's show, and them going ahead and spewing out, man, it was kind of hard for me to listen to the whatever that guy's name is. But they seem to think that, hey, look, they're white and they're privileged. Okay, so they're also going ahead and think that the way they act is that they're above us, and they were supposed to enslave us, and that's the mentality that they're pushing out. Do you not agree with that?
You talking to me or Mr. Solution?
Mr. Solution.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was for Mr. Solution. I was going ahead going off what you said. See,
that's the question.
I extended an olive branch to you, and you didn't go ahead and acknowledge that, so okay, it's cool. It's cool.
Well, I think he may have thought you was talking to me. And restate the question.
Okay, so it's like with that show, with that racist show, you know, a lot of those people, a lot of his listeners and stuff, or along the line of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh type followers, they seem to think they're privileged, and they seem to, and what they want to do is they have totally, in a sense, rewritten history to go ahead and seem like they were supposed to enslave us. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I didn't hear that last point you made. It's No White Guilt. That's the name of the show. But
yeah.
This is Mr. Midnight Movie. I call him 3M for short. He's nowhere in the intellectual, in my estimation, he's nowhere in the intellectual category of the people that you just mentioned. My strong belief is that certain people cross over, I say, bias and prejudice into actual evil. Evil is, and evil, as far as I'm concerned, is quite brilliant. Evil is intelligent. Evil is never stupid. And so this particular host doesn't rise to that level. Rush Limbaugh is brilliant. I think he's diabolical and possible. But the two hosts are nowhere. And, yeah, a lot of whites feel that when you deal with non-whites, a lot of whites feel that they are privileged. But I'm able to break it down to him, and we enjoy the bedlam and badinage, is that they do want welfare. They want the benefits. For example, I tell him, you know, you think people should be grateful for you for stealing their land and labor and then giving it back to them piecemeal. I tell him what an a-hole and a fool I think he is for taking that particular position.
Wait. Could you break that down, what you mean, piecemeal?
Well, just you know, a piece of, in other words, if someone stole your assets, all of your assets, and then gave it back to you in small, gave a quarter of it back to you in small increments, you should be grateful for that. And I point out to him how stupid that is. And I also say to him, see, they think that whites are superior. Whites are not superior. And if you deal with the skin color, now, I think Dr. Who is it? Welshing. And I read a variety of writers. I don't care what their races are. But she points out genetic annihilation, and I correlate that to the Virginia so-called the racial codes. That's in a court case called Lovings versus the State of Virginia. That's a Supreme Court case that was settled in 1972, I believe, and it was dealing with the anti-miscegenation laws of America, the anti-race mixing. And so white people use the laws to structure society to benefit exclusively them. And I just point that out to him. And sometimes we go over the Constitution, because he'll reference freedom of speech, but he doesn't know a damn thing about the origin of freedom of speech. And, of course, people are listening to him, and he has his little crew. And when I beat him about the head and shoulders severely with the issues, they'll laugh at him, and then they'll go back and try to, you know, educate him on those particular issues. But it's almost hopeless because he's so far behind understanding his racism, and he doesn't accept the dictionary definition of racism. Racism must have power. Now, I know a lot of people, a lot of whites will try, especially your racist whites, they will use isolated incidences where blacks have used control over whites, like the Reginald Denny situation, and I think he talks about flash mobs. But I point out to him that this is a tempest in a teapot. This is very, very minuscule, especially where you have 315 million people. Some people are going to be a-holes. And I point out that's wrong. If blacks beat up whites and the whites aren't doing anything from them, their asses should be arrested. They should do jail time. They shouldn't be doing that because we have to establish a civil society. But I point out to him that's not nearly as endemic and systemic as he tries to bloviate it into being. And so, you know, we just go over a whole I answer all of his bullshit is what I do. I answer basically all of his bullshit and shove it back in his face.
You know, I want to go back to the piecemeal thing because you were saying dishing it back out to the people, you know, bits and pieces. And I kind of disagree with that because let's take Africa, for instance, because the majority of the world's diamonds come from there. And they haven't go ahead and given up that control. They give you the illusion that the people control of it, but it's still, you got a lot of the beards and the all these Jewish names that are controlled. You got the chocolate industry, you got the rubber industry, gold, cobalt, one of the major components for making fighter jets. All of that stuff's coming out of Africa. They've gone ahead and making it seem like they've dished it back to them, but it's not. They still, Europeans are still in control of everything.
No, we point that out. We definitely, you're right. We point that out to them how Africa is raped by the so-called first world. We point that out. We go through all of that. So, I mean, go on the program sometime. In fact,
I can't stomach that too much.
But you know, more people should the dialogue, the male-female dialogue, the racial dialogue, which is basically bullshit. And
see,
I point
saying?
Out how the greatest. Now, see, he doesn't realize this because he's not at this particular level. But the greatest fear of most whites, those who understand, is genetic annihilation. And we look at the laws of Gregor Mendel, you know, the famous noted geneticist, and he points out that the color is dominant over non-color. White represents greatly reduced melanin. Even an Asian, which is closest to white, has... dominance, what you call hegemony, over white skin coloration. And that's why I try to move into the area of ideas. I point out how the veneer and the superficiality of skin color is what most whites bank on. And see, you have a lot of stupid whites, but they've created a system. It's called white privilege. If you look up white privilege in Wikipedia, you'll see where whiteness was considered a property right. It was tantamount to a property right. And you had dominance over all other racial groups. And remember, this thing of racial mixing, this started in the, I think, about the late 60s. Because prior to that, you had some American Indians that hadn't been slaughtered. You had pockets of Asians. But your dominant racial group or non-white group were American blacks. And blacks to this day are the most indigenous people, you know, other than the American Indians, to this particular country. Out to them how they should take their dusty asses. They like to say, well, certain groups should leave, particularly blacks. And I say, well, your dusty ass is an invader. You leave. I'll buy your ass a ticket. Because the host is a big fat guy, And I say, you know, I'll buy you a ticket on a wide-body plane to take your ass back to your point of origin. And I'm just teasing in a way because I like the fact that he talks the way he talks because at least he is expressing a position that even he points out that's often not discussed. So, I really have fun on the show personally.
I got to throw a question out here. Well, it's a comment. This one white lady had said, and I think she got it from a CNN clip. She said whites are born racist and make a choice later on whether they're going to go ahead and stay racist or go ahead and recognize what's going on based on their knowledge of the world.
I don't agree with that. I understand what you're saying, but I don't agree with that.
No, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. I think it's more of a taught thing than it is as being born with it.
Okay.
That's my theory on it anyway. You know, I don't see how anybody, you know, that's like, you know, that's like some people say you're born gay and all that. I don't think so. I think that's a choice that's made.
That's what I was saying. I brought that up because she also put the word, they make a choice later on.
Right.
They make a choice later on because you be brought up in that race in that racist household, but you be like, I ain't gonna go with that, so I'm gonna go ahead and do something else.
Right. You know, and a lot of times that comes from, you know, like you say, being in an environment. I know some people who will tell you straight up, man, my parents are racist as hell, but you know, they totally different. Now they can't take anybody home, if you know what I mean, but you know, when they're out there in the world, it's a totally different situation than when they're back at home in their little closed-in environment or surroundings or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's my theory on it. Mr. Solution, you got a theory on that?
Well, yeah, I agree that racism is learned. It's taught. But there's a payoff to being racist. And I encourage you guys to look that up. Look up the definition. Don't be afraid to look up definitions. I know you do research, Eric. But and I even refresh myself on definitions that I'm fairly familiar with, because sometimes it serves as just that. But racism has a definite benefit. It has a life benefit. Now, Dr. Anderson points out, which is interesting, he says that white Americans are born with 86% of what they need to succeed in life. 86%. Now imagine that. A person is born at the 86-yard line. They can crawl to the finish line and even the end zone way before you, no matter how fast you are, you can't outrun that person. Now, you know, he gives that illustration. Now, how accurate that is, well, I believe it's fairly accurate, actually. And he points out, he says white resources are in their families, mm-hmm. and when I do economic study, that can be borne out. It's in their families, it's in their institutions, it's in their
mm-hmm.
businesses,
mm-hmm.
in their general societies. That's the reason a person like Donald Trump, who's not necessarily that bright, Donald Trump's father is the one that laid the foundation for him. And, of course, there's nothing bad about that per se, but the point of it is that you wouldn't know Donald if it wasn't for Donald Sr. And so that has to be pointed out. And the reason he can go bankrupt and then get money again, you know, he can earn a billion, lose a billion, because that money is in his community. See, that money is in his community, and communities have a way of controlling their wealth. They're not going to let you have it. There are ways that they have to exclude people that they don't consider them or themselves. So just understand that. And that's the reason I say a lot of times American blacks stand around scratching their behinds instead of really understanding the issues. And that's why I use that little formula. If you don't have all your bills current and that year's salary and that elimination, you're not in a position to really offer advice, because you are distracted and toxic. And see, few want to deal with that, right, Eric? They don't want to deal with that.
You're right.
They want to shoot their mouth off like a Roman candle, and they have no power. They've not see what that. What that three-prong principle proves is whether what you know works for you. And that's the acid test of a person's integrity. Is that right, Eric? Do what you know work for you?
Yes.
Yeah, right. And if it's not working for you, what the hell do I want it for?
That is so true.
Yeah, I don't want your junk knowledge. Make your knowledge at least minimally work for you, and then I want to listen. I want to hear, because you've done something worthy of listening to.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly. You with that, Rob?
Yeah. I didn't agree with that. I do feel there need to be more people out in the street. I really, really do, because I came across some young, dynamic brothers. I got one young brother, man. He's 18 years old, and I happened to go ahead and be driving by, and I saw him literally on a milk crate on a busy street talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this young brother here. So I went around the block, got out the car, and came back and listened to him, and I said, man, if we just had a few more of this young brother. I got his number, talked to him, and dialogue with him, and take him around. Took him around another brother. I kind of came across him almost similar. And them two together are running around trying to feed homeless people on Fridays. So, and I go ahead and I provide some food for them on Fridays. But they try to put that message out there. Hey, look, we've got to do something about this situation.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's a man. That is a good thing. I mean, you like you said, we could get more them. Like that. It'd be a wonderful world. I think we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
To be 18 and be out here, man. I'll try and bring him to the show. I'll try and bring him over one. I'll try to go ahead and give him a call in. But you know, a lot of times he's going to school and he's got some other stuff going on. I'll try to get daytime. It's kind of hard because I can get him on at night on my show. But I'll try to get him on. You got to hear this young guy, man. I'm like,
I need
you, brother.
Well, hold on, I got another caller want to come in. Oh, let's see. Good afternoon. You're on Let's Talk. What's on your mind?
What's going on, brothers? How y'all doing?
We doing good. How you doing?
I'm good, bro. First of all, this is N.O. Lowe from out of New Orleans. And I just have a couple of comments, man. I mean, that's a wonderful thing that young man is doing, but there's so much foolishness out there in the world, you know, and that television, you know, that thing really is an idiot box.
Yep.
You know, and I seen guys 40, 50 years old walking around with their pants hanging off their ass. Man, I mean, I'm like, you know, are you serious?
That's what Brother Supreme is about to address.
Yeah. My question is, where the grown-ass man at for these younger guys to follow? I mean, these are the people that's supposed to be our tomorrow. And when I say our, I'm not only talking about the world's, I'm talking about the black tomorrow.
Well, brother, you know where they are? You really want to know where they are? They're right here, right now, talking on this radio.
Oh. I'll go with that, bro.
Praise you, Eric.
It's just, you know, it's so many guys out there. I know myself when I was younger, I was fascinated with a lot of flashy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, over time and age, a little wisdom, and if you throw Hurricane Isaac in there, guess what? That wisdom turned into straight knowledge. And my knowledge now is, I understand who I am and the things that I don't have to have. You know, life for us is not about a lot of flashy things. Life for us is more or less about more than just surviving. It's thriving and also instilling something in our children, you know, because if our children are going to be the representative of us when we're dead and gone, we have to put that example out there for you know, for example, I want my daughter to one day say, you know what, my daddy, he stayed on my behind, but for a good reason. And I appreciate that. And nowadays, we have less and less people that's, you know, that's willing to actually be parents. More children are raised by their grandparents because the kids' parents are out living their lives, you know. And so my thing is, man, you know, we first have to be men. It's going to take men first before anybody else can get themselves together. Men are going to have to be men. And my thing is, a 40-year-old man has no place running around looking for a 22-year-old girl. And, you know, that's just the way I see it. I also feel that a 30-year-old man, a 25-year-old man has no reason to walk around with his pants hanging off his ass.
Or braids in his head. Well, don't get me started.
Or braids
in
his head. I mean, I was working with a guy, and he pretty much said, he said, it's a lot of guys that got passed up in a generation gap. They didn't get to do a lot of these things when they were younger, and so now they feel that they need to reach back and catch up with it.
That's a good
point.
And,
you know, you pretty much look like an ass. I mean, would you, either of you agree?
I agree.
You know, I can't even argue. I preach that all the time. So, no, I'm in full agreement with you. Especially when you see him out there with the hair braided and head full of gray hair. You're like, really? Really? And then the ones that get me, they have it braided, but yet they come outside in a do-rag. It's 100 degrees outside. What you wearing a freaking do-rag for?
Well, you know even worse than
let
that.
Let alone be in public, but then, man, don't get me started on that.
It's crazy that you have braids in your head, but you have male pattern baldness, so your hair is already at the back part of your head.
Man, I've seen that too.
out with a man, you know, and she has to set standards. I agree with a lot of the things that Mr. Solutions has to say and quite a few of the things that Joe has to say, you know, and I think that people should hold other people responsible for their own actions. And if it is true that a white person was born with 87% of everything they'll need to succeed, then, hey, all that lets me know is, hey, I got to step my game up a little bit, and my children are going to have their game step up a little bit. So, you know, I think Paul Mooney said it best. If I see a poor white person, I start crying because that was a waste of white skin. Straight up. I mean, you had everything that you needed pretty much from your birth. You know, if you didn't want to succeed, excuse me, if you didn't want to succeed, then that was up to you. If you did, that was up to you. So I just take it how it is, man. I mean, I know what my place is. I know that I have to work twice as hard. And if either of you can answer this for me, why is it that I was born in the South, I talked to guys from all over the world, brothers, and I received the exact same thing, quote unquote. My daddy told me I would have to work twice as hard and be twice as smart than any white man to succeed. And that doesn't matter if the guy was 50, 20, or in his 30s. Why is it that we have kept saying the exact same thing all over the United States to the young black men? Is it true? Is it a myth? I mean, y'all let me know.
Mrs. Lucian, you there? You out still doing your chores?
Boy, I'm paying so many bills here. Let me tell you, man, I've got to not finish, but wow, I had a lot of bills to pay this month.
Okay.
Let's continue living.
Yeah. Well, the young brother put a question out there. I'm sure.
Yeah,
what
was the question?
Okay, well, I simply said, I mean, you know, out of everywhere I've been, all over the world, and more especially in the United States, you have guys in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even 50s saying the exact same thing. My daddy told me I had to work twice as hard and be twice as smart as any white man to make it. Now, these are guys from the South, from the East Coast, wherever. I mean, why is it and how is it that that same concept has been, you know, spread all over the 50 states in all of these different generations? It's something somebody's not doing right for it to be like that. I'm just trying to figure out what exactly is it. Are we doing something wrong here that the things haven't changed that much?
Well, yeah. Well, some of the people are doing things inappropriately. That's true. Going back, you raised a number of issues, and I'll just run through these because I'm finished now. All I got to do is write the check now. That's the easy part. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's see. Now, with respect to the men being, you say a man should be a man or something to that effect. Well, see, what has happened
actually, I said that before anybody else gets anywhere, men are going to have to be men.
Well, that's true. But now we have to look at what that means in real time and real space. What has happened is, and I agree, white men mainly, Caucasian men, someone may have to mute. Caucasian men have given women an inordinate amount of power. Now, that has violated men's 14th and Fifth Amendment rights for educational and informational purposes, not legal advice. So what has happened is men have sat by and allowed this to happen. Now, a couple of things are going to have to happen. Number one, men are going to have to start telling the truth in unison. They're going to have to learn the truth first. And then they're going to have to start stating the truth. Now, from the legal standpoint, which very few people understand because that flies over their heads, is that women are empowered and backed up by the full force of the law. And as a result of that, a woman has the power to veto anything a man said. She can override it. Override it in the birth process. She has exclusive rights to birth. That wasn't always true. That wasn't true before Roe versus Wade, that 1973 Supreme Court decision, which in essence gave women the right to opt out of being a parent. So that's one major area. Women don't have to register for the Selective Service.
Right.
So that particular burden is not on women, or I should say responsibility. That's not on women. Women basically are exempt from any requirements of the law in that respect. Men aren't. You don't register for the Selective Service. Now, a lot of men don't understand this. But if you don't register for the Selective Service, and if your family isn't wealthy, you're locked out of this society. You can't get any student loans, student grants, can't. And I recently checked UCLA, and their administration, their admissions office. Hey, Eric, somebody needs
okay.
to mute, I think.
Okay. Boy, man.
Yeah, I recently checked with UCLA, and this is true of virtually all – it is true of all universities around the nation. They strictly check where the males have registered for the Selective Service. And if you haven't, like I say, you can't get student loans and grants, and you can't get any professional license. You can't even get a job if you don't register for the Selective Service. Now, that's not true of women. Now, men have to speak up and out against that, and they have to inform women that you're being subsidized. Sure, I believe you can make it on your merit, but evidently the big, you know, daddy government doesn't believe that. So let women know where they really exist in time and space, and that's one of the reasons I say one gentleman was talking about, well, a man should stay in his lane with respect to women. I say bullshit. Women aren't equal to men by law. Now, the law gives them equality, but it's, at the same time, it gives them superiority in exempting them from certain citizens' obligations. And that's being fought in the courts right now, which is a good thing. And so I would ask this gentleman about dating. How are you teaching your daughter to date? Are you teaching her to be a taker, or are you teaching her to be a partner? In other words, is she just there with her hand out being a narcissist saying, well, I need guys to give me this, this, and this. I'm not committed to them. They've got to treat me like they're committed, but I'm not committed to any of them. So you need to check yourself on that, because a lot of fathers, well-meaning as they may be, set their daughters up to be selfish bitches. That's what a lot of fathers do. So what you've got to do is tell your daughter what she should be giving, juxtaposed to just expecting to receive. And I'll just help you out with that by saying she should be giving her personality, which is all she should be expecting of the guy. So when she goes on a date, she can ask a guy to the park to get to know his character, and he get to know her character through conversation. He doesn't owe her a meal or a drink or anything until he's sure that she's meaningful to him. Now, that's a very, very, very important point, the power of the truth and the power of pragmatism. So that's so those are some of the areas that I would just summarize that are often looked over. And you won't be able to overcome the power of the law that it bestows upon women. You won't be able to really overcome that. The best thing you can do while that's being fought in court, change, is to tell a woman the truth. Tell her what you want and expect of her. And that way you help to kind of balance the scales, at least where you guys are communicating on the same page. Does that make sense? Do you follow that?
Are you asking me?
anybody that heard
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I will tell you exactly what I told my daughter. I graduated high school, and I lived in a fairly small town, but I had the job that all of the adults wanted at a nice little factory or whatever at 18. And so I was privileged to the point where I had a nice apartment and two cars at 18, 19 years old. And all of this was legal. And I told my daughter, I used all of that to my advantage because all of that eye candy that those females saw was nothing more than a trap that was laid there. Okay, I have a nice car. Oh, you want to go to dinner? Okay, well, let's go to dinner. If I take you to a nice restaurant, and if you eat off a certain part of that menu, there are expectations there.
What are they? What are the expectations?
Well, I just tell you, if you're going to get you some lobster and shrimp, I'm getting some pussy. I'm just telling you straight up, that's just the way it was. Okay, you want to get a hamburger? Fine. Yeah, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. And there is something that you say that I do agree with 1,000%. There is no reason for either of us to go on a date and spend money. Not the first or the second date anyway. Matter of fact, if we go on a date and we go to a restaurant, I would prefer to go Dutch. But let's just go to a park or somewhere where there are not a lot of people so we can talk and find out about each other. And, you know, I would want to know where your head is more specifically. I mean,
exactly.
You know,
now, that's very good. I like that because, see, what that does is, see, what happens is most of us, we fight it out in a situation that's damnable. In other words, if you get in a relationship with the person, you can't discuss these fundamental and foundational issues. It's like building a house and then pouring the foundation. You can't do it that way. You've got to lay the foundation first and then build a house upon the foundation. So what happens is people lie and play games and snooker up and, you know, this sort of thing, and then they get connected with each other. And then what happens is they end up settling their disputes in court in the face of a cold, greedy arbiter. And
right.
So that's the wrong way to do it. So I applaud you. Now, that was kind of a little bit, that may be considered a little bit crude by some. But understand this. Women want sex as much as men. This is something that the racist assholes, the racist separatists, and I talk about. And we're going to move into some other areas. But one of the points I make, and I have sufficient evidence to back it up, and by the way, every woman and almost every man on those shows who has called in has agreed that women have as strong or stronger sex drive than men. So why are men even considered in the position of paying for sex? That's stupid.
Good question. That's a
question. It's a damn good question, and we need to answer it. It's because we have allowed everything to really, careen out of control, and all of us are lying like rugs. Now, I do say this. A man and a woman should delay sex and money until they have gotten to know each other. And that could go anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
I even say that the CDC says that I know of African-American women or black American women, 48% of them, roughly one out of two, have herpes, incurable herpes. And so you guys can go to the CDC website and actually review that for yourself. Have you done that, Eric? Have you reviewed that?
Yes, I have. Yes, I
is that true or not? Can you confirm that or not?
Yes, that is very true. That is
right. 48% of black women between the ages of 14 and 49
mm-hmm.
have herpes. So you want to be very careful there. Unless you have herpes, you don't want to get that shit, right?
Oh no.
That brings a 10 to a negative 0. A negative 0, and that doesn't even exist. But the thing is that These are the kind of adult conversations that need to be had. I even talk about a prenuptial agreement, not so much for wealth preservation, but for structuring the relationship. And one of the things I was explaining to a therapist in the UK, and she was, you know, ignorant of this fact, when you sign a state marriage license, you are signing a prenuptial agreement. That is a prenuptial agreement. Now, most people never read, you know, the legislative law called family law governing marriage and divorce. But you are signing a prenuptial agreement. It's just not a personal prenuptial agreement. It's a public prenuptial agreement. Do you follow me on that, gentlemen?
I follow you.
All right. So these are the structural and mechanical things we talk about, because my background is engineering. So a relationship has structural components, and we can actually deal with those components if we allow ourselves to grow to that particular vantage point. You follow me? So we can deal with things in terms of enhancing communication. Now, I heard Deborah Cooper, and I encourage you guys to listen to her. Miss Heartbeat, I think you're one of her listeners, correct, Eric?
Yes. When I
yeah,
get
she
you, yeah.
was talking about, now she disagrees with me. It's very convoluted, and it really makes no sense, but she disagrees that women should initiate conversation with men and ask men out for dates. See, what that does is it keeps the game going. It allows women to be in control of a very vital process, which really blocks communication. So since it's so necessary for men and women to introduce themselves, both need to share in that vital adult responsibility. Do you guys agree with that or not?
I wish I would have met you probably 15 years ago, man. That's one of the best parts of any relationship component there is right there. The initial.
Well, see,
part.
Women need to hear that. A good book that you can read is called The Myth of Male Power. I really encourage you guys to get that book by Warren Farrell. The Myth of Male Power. And you will see things in there, nuances and particular facets of relationships that you've never even thought of. Because a lot of stuff flies over our heads. You know, we're working, we're busy. We don't have a chance to figure this stuff out.
No,
and
we
the
don't.
Society has a way of supporting women, giving women all the power. And a relationship, mm-hmm. a partnership cannot operate with one person being a 9-foot giant and the other person being a 2-foot midget. Nothing against midgets or giants, by the way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to have to end it there. I'm like 24 minutes over.
Oh, all right. Well, look here. You guys have a great day, and I'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right, man. All right.
Hey,
thank you, Mr. Solution. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Solution. Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Like I didn't know who you were. So, Supreme, Rob, everybody in the chat room, I sure appreciate it. Sure appreciate it. Hey, check us out. When you go home tonight, make sure you love, give that someone special love. Give them a kiss. Tell them you love them. Until tomorrow, people, see you there. I'm out of here.